Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Joining me for an insight into the world of personality testing is Kelvin Wong. He's a senior lecturer in clinical psychology at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. Kelvin, welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me.
Have you taken one of these for real or only for fun? Tell me about personality tests from your point of view.
Yeah, definitely for fun. I have done something like the Myers-Briggs for fun. It's nice and short to be able to complete. If I were to do it seriously, I would probably choose a different one, but that one takes a lot longer to do.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get into the Myers-Briggs and others as well. How short versus long versus AI versus everything makes a difference. Can we have a little history lesson? When did personality tests begin?
Oh, to be honest, like it could be tracked as early as almost 1000 BC. So originated in ancient China, the earliest texts would suggest that they examined behavior and character of individuals just to see if they're suitable for certain jobs in the public system.
Really? 1000 BC, we were having personality tests. I mean, it makes sense, I suppose, that you want to try and work out, well, what is this person like? Okay, so what about more recently than that? When did we start using the ones that we even know of now? Like you've already mentioned Myers-Briggs. How old is that one?
That one's probably about like, has its origins around about like 1980s. The thing is that with the Myers-Briggs, it's developed off of Carl Jung's theories of archetypes. So suggesting that people have different ways of responding to the world. There's a dominant way of how they respond to the world. And these two individuals, these two psychologists, has ended up developing a test to break down personality into one of 16 types. So there are other tests that maybe started in around about 1940s, looking at personality as well. But there's even some tests in, as early as 1917 using a different sort of test to look at who might be more vulnerable to developing things like PTSD. You know, that was really helpful during that period when, wars were being fought. So there's different reasons over the course of history why people have been interested in personality tests, but our understanding of, what makes a good personality test has definitely evolved over time.
Yeah, okay. I'd love to hear from you if you're listening to Nightlife tonight. My name's Bern Young. Give me a call on 1300 800 222. Have you got any experience with personality tests? Maybe you've taken one. Maybe you work in, human resources and you use personality tests. Do you think you nail that person in terms of who they are and the way they work and the way they think? And if you've had one and the test results have come back, did it reflect who you are? I'm intrigued to hear about your experience with personality tests. 1300 800 222. Give me a call this evening. Talk about these archetypes. I mentioned before a few of these acronyms. I mean, there's so many of them. So I'm not expecting you to go through every infinite possibility of the Myers-Briggs. Yeah. But the E is for extroversion. The I is for introversion. So I think we can, that bit we can work out. The T is for thinking. The F is for feeling. The J is for judging. The P is for perceiving. S is for sensing. What are we talking about there? And N is for intuition. So, all of it matters, doesn't it? But how does it work?
Yeah. So when you're talking about sensing in this case,
yeah. Well, what's the sensing?
Yeah. About? So sensing would be more, you're a little bit more grounded. You're focusing on facts and details. You might tend more to use and apply common sense and past experiences. Whereas, intuition or intuitives, they might focus on possibilities, the big picture, looking at patterns, as opposed to, the fine nitty-gritty kind of details. And they tend to be more creative. At least that's what the theory suggests.
Yeah. Does this mean, though, that creatives can't have the ability to be practical and use past, common sense and past experience?
Oh, yeah. So, no, I think the fallacy or the idea of these 16 archetypes or combinations on the Myers-Briggs makes, you know, makes someone think that, oh, if you're in this particular camp, then that's all you are. But no, the reality is that it's a continuum. So let's just say even with sensing and being intuitive, you can lie on a continuum of how much you are a sensor or how much you are an intuitive, right? So it's not one or the other, although it does, the test, the results the test gives you tends to give off that illusion.
Yeah, okay. So, and that is the interesting thing about these personality tests, isn't it? Hmm. I was once talking to a career coach and they got me to do a so I've never done one for to get a job. So I haven't done it for real, but I did one for the purposes of interviewing some career coaches, and this was years ago. And I don't have the test anymore, so I can't remember exactly what they asked me, but it was about 32 questions, I think. And I remember just being really frustrated that I couldn't number them 1 to 4 instead of having to just answer one box. I don't know what that says about my personality, Kelvin. Must say something. But
need for certainty.
The need for certainty, perhaps. And that somehow this was, you know, making me answer something in a way that none of it actually applied, but I had to give an answer. But they were of the feeling that the more questions you're asked, the more detailed, the more nuanced. What do you think? Because you've talked about big tests and shorter tests. How nuanced can these things get?
Yeah, so definitely quite nuanced. So it really just depends on the personality theory that you're going to be using. So these tests that are developed, they all develop from certain theories of personality. So typically in the realm of psychologists who have come up with, you know, what is personality made up of, right? So I mentioned a little bit earlier that the Myers-Briggs is based off Carl Jung's, you know, archetypes theory, that, you know, you have these different sort of categories of, you know, personality that you fall into, one of 16, essentially. But the reality, I think, more accurately is captured by, you know, quite a popular model of personality that we call the Big Five personality model. And that suggests that you have, you know, that you lie on a continuum of one, you know, on five different personality traits. And even within those personality traits, there are even six sub-factors. So, you know, you can be, you can have scores on 30 sort of different traits of personality, as opposed to, let's say, 8 that the Myers-Briggs offers, right?
Yeah, I mean, and then I suppose the more there are, the more nuanced it can get. I want to turn to the phones.
That's right.
Kelvin. Kelvin Wong is joining me as we discuss personality tests. You may well be asked to do one this year for whatever reason. Kelvin's a senior lecturer in clinical psychology at Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. I've got Jamie on the line in Cairns in far north Queensland. Hi, Jamie.
Yeah, how you going?
Yeah, good. Have you done your PhD in what?
No. I'm right at the end of it. So my PhD is in project management, human behavioural science and emerging technologies. So what I look at quite carefully is people, personality types, learning styles and individual needs. And sorry about that, the truck coming by.
That's all right.
What I sort of say is that in the workforce these days, we treat people like numbers. We've got KPIs and all that sort of stuff, and we've got HR that are doing their thing. And if you're a project manager and you've got 3,000 people, say, on a BMA site doing a dragline build, it's very difficult to have the human element that's there. So we do look at personality types, but we have to be mindful that personality types change. They're not fixed things. Briggs is a great thing. I use DISC profiling, which is a very simple four factor thing. So, like, we've got, you know, D is your directors, I is your innovators, C is your controllers, S is your socialites. Within that sort of spectrum, we could be a high D, a high S. But these things change as as we evolve during our day. So we could be an ENF IJ on Briggs, and in the morning we could have something that impacted us, you know, like something at home, we're a bit stressed, we go to work, and we come across a high S who's very social, a little bit hyperactive, and they're giving us that, you know, high-energy vibe. That'll likely frustrate that, you know, really mindful, empathetic person, and they might turn around and become a little bit sharp. So as a project manager, we need to identify these things so we can, you know, assist that person. So it's not about the workforce just being at the work site. It's also, you know, what's going on at home, because these things can impact we need to manage these things and be mindful of these changes within personality types.
Yeah, and so, Jamie, just to clarify, so you're talking about, say, a construction site at the moment, are you? Is that what you're suggesting? Is a
my field of study actually goes from construction sites in the medical, goes into schools. It can be applied in relationships, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah.
Which is why I sort of, you know, skip over personality types to some degree, go into learning style, because we've all got that learning style. And as a manager, we need to understand, you know, how people learn. But my focus is on individual need. So we all have needs, we all have wants. But individual need is something that I focus on a lot. When businesses understand people's needs and they can match those needs with benefits, it's more likely that that person will take ownership of the position and become self-managing. If you've got a self-managing workforce, your life as a project manager is very easy. All you've got to do is keep an open door policy. People will come and tell you, you know, I've made a mistake, or, you know, this is what's going on. And you manage that on a human basis, right? Your production levels will come up, your safety will increase because people don't have that fear that they're going to get into trouble for saying, you know, I need help, this is what's going on.
Jamie, it's I'm loving what you're, you know, giving us an insight into, because it just goes to show, you know, because in a way we part of this conversation is around, you know, are we being boxed in by personalities? But you're showing us the side of it that if you do understand how people tick, that you really can have a more productive, a safer workplace. Let's hope a happier one as well. I've got to move on to other calls, but I really appreciate your call tonight.
Just on happiness. Happiness and curiosity are the two most important things these days in business. Second to that is empathy and mindfulness. I don't really focus on the you know, the high IQ, the high EQ type world. We don't want to put people in the boxes that are going to form constraints.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to have that flexibility in place. But, yeah, thanks for the chat.
Yeah, good on you, Jamie. I'm really passionate about it, quite clearly, and doing your PhD in human behavioural studies. Yeah, great to hear from you tonight. 1-300-800-222. Kelvin, just before we move on, just this idea of how your personality changes, because Janine's on the text line saying, you know, well, what shapes a personality? Do traits change even just as we age, as we grow, you might say, rather than age?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think over long periods of time, these traits can change. I think there are things that can happen in our day-to-day life that can affect what we call our state, which is, you know, temporarily how we might feel towards certain things, how we might approach certain things can be influenced by things that happen in our environment. But the idea behind personality largely is that there are these relatively stable traits over time that, you know, again, can slowly change. But, you know, it would be quite rare for there to be that sudden change.
Yeah.
Right. So there would be changes over time. Absolutely.
I've got Paul on the line from 2J in Western Australia. Hi, Paul. Oh, hang on a minute, Paul. Let me put you on air and give you a voice. Hello, Paul.
Oh, hello.
Hello. Did you do a personality test today?
No.
Oh, I thought that's
it was a few years ago.
Okay.
And they gave me questions like, if you see a young child trying to bang a nail into a bit of wood and he doesn't know how to do it, would you take the hammer off him or would you show him how to put the nail in the wood? And that was one of the questions to get the job.
Mm. And I just thought,
how did you answer
it,
Paul?
Across anything like this.
How did you answer it? Do you remember?
Yeah, I said I would teach him how to put the nail in the wood.
Yeah. And did you get the job?
I got the job.
Okay.
Yeah. And what kind of job was it?
Driller's off cider.
Right. Okay.
And I went to another job and I was dressed in a suit. I hired a suit because I had no suit. And it was a driller's off cider, which is very muddy and dirty work. Anyway, I knocked on the door and he opened the door and he said, "You're hired." And I said, "You don't even know me." And he said, "Look, you dressed up for the job. The last bloke that come here, we've had 15 of them. They all wearing shorts and thongs. They don't really care whether they get the job or not. You're in a suit and you've got the job. Can you start tomorrow?" I said, "Yes, I can." How neat is that, mate?
And you didn't even have – your suit said it all. Obviously, it said everything about you, Paul, at 2J. I like that. What do you reckon they were looking for there, Kelvin? Like, can you – as a clinical psychologist, do you understand what they'd be looking for with a question like that?
Yeah, I wonder if it's very similar to – I mean, it sounds like they wanted to know how you think in – specific situations, right? And they believe that might then be reflective of, you know, how you are as a person, right? Like, you know, are you approaching this in a cautious way? Are you approaching this in a way that is open to new experiences? Are you, you know, showing any sort of empathy or kindness? I'm sure sort of these very situational kind of tests are trying to tap into something like that. But I think the risks with these particular questions is that, just like how what I'm saying right now, is that it's quite broad. You could be tapping into a lot of different things about a person, about their ways of problem solving. So I think for a test to be useful, you probably want it to be a little bit more precise and not be so open to interpretation.
Yeah. Just before we hear a few other stories of people who've either used these tests or taken these tests, Paul at 2J, thanks for your call tonight. I'll just pick up on a particular question that someone was telling me about, that someone had used. They were a medical student, I believe, going for a job in the medical area. I think it was even to part of the medical degree, which I'm not sure how that works, but they were asked the question, you're a passenger in a car, your friend is driving and they're speeding, going 40 k's an hour over the limit round the bend. Do you feel A, elated, B, terrified, or C, a mixture of both? What are they looking for in a question like, I guess it's about risk-taking. There's something about risk-taking going on there, but it didn't feel like there's enough options to really tell you much. But perhaps it is because it's not just this question. It's also the question before that and the question before that and the five questions to come. What do you think?
My first question with that would be, my first response would be, is that based on a validated personality test, right?
Yeah.
Or is it like a question that was very designed specifically for this interview? Because you know, if you think about how sometimes tests can be developed, it could just be a panel of, you know, these medical doctors and they go like, oh, maybe we'll ask this question and then see how they respond. And we think that that's how it's related, right? We think that these things might be related to the job that we're going to be asking this person to do.
Okay.
So it may be very specific, right? It may be very specific to whoever designed the test. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that. So it may not be. Well, I'll ask you more about validated personality tests in a moment, but I just want to turn to James, who's listening in Chermside in Brisbane. Hi, James.
Hello.
What's your experience with personality tests, James?
I've got a master's degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, in business administration. I majored in sustainable enterprise, but one thing I've come a lot, one thing that I've come across quite a lot is a theory called Bath Goal Leadership, and it's a corporate leadership model of different, like the goal, and there's the path to the end goal in organizations to, and there's four different factors. There's there's directing, there's supportive, participative, and then there's performance driven. So there's four different factors that every leader displays in the workplace, and some possess all of them, which makes up a really great versatile leader. Others, you know, are more dominant or, you know, directive. As we were talking about, it was mentioned before about, you know, directing and things. And then, you know, obviously performance and directing comes hand in hand. It's actually more of an American, corporate American sort of theory. It's not as, you know, known about here in Australia, but there's definitely some, like it's still quite common sense as one theory. And it does tie into, you know, the psychological side of how, you know, different personality tests as well.
And have you had to do a personality test yourself, maybe even as part of your MBA or anything, James?
I've done a Myers-Briggs, yeah. To be honest, I don't really believe that some of them are more accurate than others. Myers-Briggs is definitely one of the most renowned. And I would say, you know, due to, like, the questions and where you can really think about yourself and, I guess, like, you know, how you perform and, you know, expectations of others and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, I have done Myers-Briggs, but it wasn't part of my MBA, actually. It was a part of... it was actually part of a workforce sort of, like, what would you call it, course about, like, the workforce and things.
Yeah, so part of, like, in-house training or something to sort of understand who you are and what your other co-workers are like and that kind of thing. Yeah, interesting, James. Thanks for your call tonight on 1-300-800-222. Just to pick up on something that James said, Calvin, you know, because he said that's a bit more of an American style, but, I mean, a lot of jobs are global these days and people are going for jobs overseas and with these big, you know, multinational companies and the like. So what's the most – is there a test that you're more likely to do for big, you know, some of the bigger – I don't know, corporate jobs, for instance, versus, I don't know, other jobs?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that because, it depends on, you know, the research that that particular field or even that particular organization might draw on. A lot of the research suggests, at least a lot of research has used, let's say, the Big Five model of personality to use it to predict job satisfaction, the rate of turnover, and let's say, you know, whether or not they might engage in voluntary redundancy, right? Yeah. So these particular factors that, let's say, if a particular organization cares about these things, they may tap into the research looking at that and therefore use something like a test that might use the theory of the Big Five factor model of personality.
Yeah, which you said went down into like six or so sub-factors of each five factors.
Like 30.
It's got about 30. Yeah. And I just want to pick up too, Jack picked us up on this. Jack's been doing their maths while listening to the radio saying, shouldn't there be 24 personality types? And there are 24 personality types in the Myers-Briggs because there's, you know, four and four. There's so many different ways you can do it. But yeah, 24 different acronyms under that Myers-Briggs version. I'll just take a few more calls on this on Nightlife, 1-300-800-222. My name's Bern Young and Calvin Wong is with you as well. He lectures in clinical psychology and has written about personality tests and whether they're really accurate and how popular they are now. He's from the University of Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne. I've got John, who's on the line in Mount Tambourine, just behind the Gold Coast, but you needed to do this in order to get to Antarctica, by the sounds of things. Hi, John.
G'day, Ben. Hi, Kel.
Hi.
Yeah, so to gain selection, once you're at the sharp end, the initial psychological assessment to get there, to be able to live in confines with other people for 12 months in Antarctica, was done by, for me in particular, with the Army in Kelvin Grove. When I gained selection, then we had the Myers-Briggs was given to whoever was station leader and deputy station leader. We did it. So, funnily enough, I still remember my acronyms from 30-odd years ago, but, yeah.
You could still... 30-odd years ago, John?
33, yeah. So I was an ENFJ.
An ENFJ. Oh, and it is 16. Sorry. Someone was saying 24 before, but it is definitely 16. Libby, thank you for your text. Yeah. And I've got it right in front of me here. There are 16. And did you say an ENFJ?
It's an ENFJ or an ENFT. Something like that. Yeah,
okay. So if you're an ENFJ, you're caring, you're enthusiastic, you're idealistic, you're diplomatic. Is this sounding like you? John?
Oh, I must have fudged it.
You fudged it. Actually,
the core of it was pretty right. It was interesting. It was like the Army psychology testing as well. It took a little bit to realise. That took a full day. And it took a little bit to realise that I was never meant to finish all the exam.
Right.
And I was under pressure at different times. And the higher the rank the person came in to tell me, you need to be finished, you need to hurry up. And I realised that they were just putting me under pressure and I was never really going to finish it. So, yeah, that was quite interesting. But
I could see
the repetition.
Yeah, you could see the repetition, but also even the conditions they were putting you under were part of the test.
Yeah, 100%. So I could see that there were questions brought about slightly different, five or six questions apart. So if you tried to wing it and think about every question, it was never really going to happen. So you just had to go with your initial thoughts and keep rolling with that.
Yeah,
it's very interesting.
Yeah, be true to who you are, John.
Well, that's it. We're there for a whole day, so there's no point in trying to do anything other than just go with what you think and just tick the boxes and keep moving on. But the Myers-Briggs ones, I thought, because when I got to the selection of deputy station leader, so for the four stations, there was two from each station there, and it was interesting that I thought they were quite accurate to some people of other stations that I had a look at, and I thought, yeah, you're in this box for me, that's why I'm putting you. And it was reasonably correct. Yeah, so...
And was it helpful, John, do you think, to understand? I mean, you're a long way away and you're surrounded by the people that you are surrounded by for a very long time if you're working for the Australian Antarctic Division.
Yes.
Particularly, well, I imagine it would be even more so over winter than summer. But
yes, 100%.
How did you use those findings yourself?
Well, the realisations came to me fairly quickly that the group dynamics changed quite a bit anyway. So people threw under different stresses that you wouldn't be aware of. It might be happening with a family or a wife or a child back home in Australia. You could see them being affected in different ways. So then how somebody was for the first 2 months might not have been how that person was for the last 3 months. It was just interesting. So, yeah, the group dynamics, Kelvin, you would have been interested to see that. But it was was quite good. So I'd done a fair bit of remote work beforehand. So I was fairly sort of stoic in my role. I knew what I had to do and that was it. So I could sort of roll through a little bit. But people who weren't so used to working remote and being alone, you could see the changes in them.
So interesting. John, I'm so grateful for you calling in because that's a really interesting perspective, you know, that very remote work.
I know you want to take more calls, but the hardest thing, though, for you maybe, Kelvin, for us coming out, is there was a Lieutenant Colonel who was doing the psychiatric assessment on us coming out on the ship. This is before, now they fly, we're on a ship then. And they put all the expeditionist photographs that you were with for the last year in front of you, and they give you a whole lot of criteria to grade them. Who contributed most to morale, who contributed most to work performance, who had the worst personality, and that was very difficult to do. Because you realise that what you were scoring people on would impact if they ever wished to come down again.
Yeah. So that was very interesting. Good on you, John. Nice to have Thanks, you John. On Nightlife. Thanks for the call tonight on 1-300-800-222. A few people are questioning on the text line, hasn't Myers-Briggs been discredited now? Others saying, you know, it's still popular, but research would suggest that the big five, as you've been saying, Kelvin, is more robust.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess it's a little hard to know which one everyone's using, because a lot of this stuff is quite private in the corporate world, particularly whether, you know, what they're using. I mentioned that my you know, one of my teenage kids had a personality test just for a job at the supermarket. Interestingly, it was quite, I've got to say, they got her, I think, in whatever, but I don't know which, I don't know what test they used, and I couldn't even help but feel that maybe just some, you know, some AI test would be put together these days without it being, you know, properly validated. As you said before, these validated tests, Kelvin. I do need to wrap this conversation up, and we are still getting some calls through, so we might just go back to the telephones in a moment. But can I ask you, Kelvin?
Sure.
John mentioned that he fudged it, or, you know, can you game? Can you game these things? Can you really outthink a personality test?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you think about it, it's these self-report tests, they are very open to biases, right? How you report them, especially if you are aware of the purpose of the test. If you are, let's say, applying to be a, you know, a doctor, right? And you're doing this as part of your interview, you might be quite aware about, you know, what sort of person that they're trying to look for, right? And in that case, you would be able to see when you're given the questions, you can go, oh, maybe I should answer that, provide responses that would indicate that I would be more conscientious, right? Maybe I'm more extroverted. Maybe I'm low on neuroticism, right? So these particular things, that's how you could game it, especially if you're aware of what the potential outcome is, what the, I guess, the interviewer or the job is looking for.
Yeah, Stuart's just been on the text line saying that he's been reading a book that says under no circumstances should anyone do a personality test because HR will use it against you. What are your thoughts on that, Kelvin? Do you think it's used for or against you? I mean, you know.
Probably depends on the company. Again, there's definitely some really good research to suggest that, you know, having these particular personality tests, doing them at the start, can be quite helpful in predicting certain outcomes. Like I mentioned before, job satisfaction, whether or not it's likely that you might quit the job early, whether or not you might go for promotion, like all of these particular things, research has shown that some personality tests are able to predict them. So there is some use, but I don't know. I mean, I'm really hoping that HR doesn't use it against people, and I'm curious as to how they might do that. But yes, I think, well, information is power, right?
Yeah.
The more you know about something, it just depends on whether or not the other side is a bad actor or not.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, an interesting conversation to have, and certainly plenty of people have got experience with these personality tests, judging by the text line and the phone line tonight. Kelvin, really interesting to get your perspective on this. Someone was saying on the text line that I know you're a lecturer in clinical psychology, and they're saying psychologists don't use personality tests, but that wasn't the basis of our conversation here tonight. Kelvin's looked into personality tests. That's why he's a guest on the program tonight. He's not using them as a clinical psychologist, in case you're wondering. Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your Friday night to join me here on Nightlife. Kelvin Wong, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.